Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit VoicesOfWrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for August 27th, 2024. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on our own dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red boxes to sponsor the podcast, and you can set up a one-time or recurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous sponsors. I am one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joining alongside, as always, your other co-host, Case Lowe. And Case, if you were participating in an international Grand Prix, who would you want to be there to represent you from the United States?
You.
I'm touched, buddy. I would have you there.
I can't think of an American that I like more.
It's just a quick jaunt for me. I can get down there for you, man.
Yeah. You can cross the border.
I think it's like an hour 15 from DFW. Yeah. Gladly. Yeah.
I got nothing else going on. My Instagram is all Japanese guys and Mexican wrestlers. There's no one in America that I really like all that much.
Yeah, it is something. Have you noticed sometimes, like, you are scrolling your phone next to your partner and you go like, I'm on Instagram, and you know, and it's just like so many things are popping up and you're like, she has no worries whatsoever about
me
right now.
Well, it's like the only issue I run into is I follow the Weekly Puro account on Instagram, and mm-hmm. I'll get like a Joshi bikini shoot every once in a while. And it's like, it's not for me. I promise. This is I'm actually looking for like the Yota Tsuji photos on this account. Not any of this. Don't you worry.
Yeah, I want to see like what stops were made by everyone in Mexico City this week. I don't care about it. But I want to see, like, if they took Yoda Tsuji to the ziggurats, I want to see him at the ziggurats, you know? That's what I'm here for. But yeah, for those who are wondering why I kicked off this, International Grand Prix, the most fun anyone can have in an hour of wrestling this year. Like, just the blast game.
It was a really, really awesome match. The whole show was fun. I think CMLL, like we kind of talked about promotion of the year stuff last year, and CMLL has been very steady. It's been good. It hasn't been very good. You know, it's largely just existed week to week, but the high points are still so high. And the Grand Prix, look, last year was one of my top 10 matches of the year, and that was primarily the CMLL guys against a lot of the New Japan LA guys. So it was Rocky, and it was TJP and Kevin Knight and all the guys they had still in LA at that point. I thought that match was just a hair better, but that didn't have Claudio versus Místico, and that certainly counts for something. If you have not seen the Grand Prix yet, you need to go out of your way to watch it.
And it doesn't have the Death Samurai Akira grappling with Ultimo Guerrero.
Kind of works in CMLL, right?
It is so wild. Like, the more outlandish you are, like, I've become like a big MXM fan over like the last few months. Like, I get the act, like, their Twitter presence, okay, whatever. But Mansoor, just at every opportunity, going to just do his poses and then going to kiss the trophy and then doing a running splash was like, I was like, okay, this guy is like, I want to see this dude do like a 9-month tour here.
I agree. I actually thought he was actively very good in that match. The only person out of all 20 that were in the match, the only person that didn't bring it was Davey Boy Smith. And that is a fault of him, but that's also like, what were we thinking? Did we all think Davey Boy Smith was going to be awesome in CMLL? No, of course not. You know, I thought actively ground the match to a halt, but otherwise everybody else had their working shoes on. And it's a shame Americans are too dumb to understand that style of match.
And like the even more insulting thing about that, I explained it to Kingsley within like one sentence. I was like, it's a 8-on-8 match, baseball rules. You have a batting order who you have to tag with, and you keep on wrestling until there's one person. It's not that hard.
No, but people couldn't understand the AEW ranking system.
Yeah. And this is the company that everyone is going the casino gauntlet. It's the most innovative match type ever. And I'm just sitting here going, have we forgotten about the Wakayama winning tornado match?
Hey, Mike, are you watching the Rangers game right now?
No, is the Rangers game actually happening?
Dude, you got to turn it on.
I can't.
Oh, you can't? Oh my God, that's right. Okay, so.
Bally's, right. Yeah, I canceled Fubo because I'm not paying $50 for a month for something called Fubo when I'm trying to rebuild a garage over here, Case.
So, my Chicago White Sox are playing Mike's Rangers tonight. I was just telling Mike before we started recording, I have a very strict schedule of when I take my dog out because it's what I think works best for her and best for me. But she kind of broke schedule tonight and was looking at me 10 minutes before we started recording. I'm like, hey, man, I need to go outside real quick. It's the hottest day of the year in Chicago. It felt like 115 out for most of today. I took her outside. I looked at the sky. I was not ready for the torrential downpour that it was. It started pouring. And 5 pitches into the game now, Mike, they are pulling all the players off the field. Garrett Crochet was acting like it wasn't raining as hard as humanly possible and was just going. And now, from the time I started this monologue to now, they have pulled the players off the field, which is so disappointing.
I mean, you get 5 pitches in. You let them finish the at-bat, at least. I mean,
it's raining so hard. It's so bad outside.
All I'm saying is that we dealt with that one player who played for 2 teams technically in the same game last week. We can make this work now.
I enjoyed that.
We're a country of doers.
Yeah. Real quick, I've got 3 super quick topics. We don't need to spend a lot of time on any of them, but I want to hit all of them before we talk about stuff that isn't Dragon Gate and then stuff that is Dragon Gate.
All right, let's do it.
Okay. In an update from last week, the Naruki Doi match that was uploaded to the IWRG Archive YouTube channel, we have determined that it's not that Doi came to Mexico way earlier than any of us thought. It is that match is probably from 2001 or 2002 because the luchador that he's wrestling, and I can't think of his name right now, He didn't start showing up in the Lucha database until that time as well. So for some reason, IWRG is uploading all of these cool old matches now. They're not putting dates on any of them. And on the upload, they're uploading two matches, and they're not from the same show. It makes no sense.
I mean, that is like the most like IWRG thing possible. They've completely screwed up cage match between Saito versus Sairio.
Yes, exactly. So speaking of, so the upload today is Rey Pantera and Nemesis against Fantasy and Saito, which is all caps Saito, which is the man that we now know as Super Shisa. And I have not had a chance to watch this yet. Rob Viper assumes it's from July of 98.
Yeah, that sounds
kinda,
right.
Yeah, that would kind of make sense.
I tried to look this up because Rob made a comment about, oh, this Nemesis, you get a chance to see them. They now are under a new mask and you don't see them that often. So that kind of sent me on a wild goose chase to figure out when this match was and who that was. So,
so that's in the Dragon Gate channel on the Voices of Wrestling Discord. Obviously, I'm going to devour that because it's Saito and I'm excited, and that's good stuff there. So that's the update. The Doi match, we don't have new Doi lore that we need to dive into. And also, there's new Saito stuff. Obviously, you know, Saito, I will call him Shisa, is Japanese, but trained in Mexico. He was trained by Rey Mendoza. He trained in Mexico with Hayabusa when Hayabusa went over to Mexico. I don't know what he was doing before that. I don't know how he got to Mexico. I don't know if he's a little bit like not Delphin. Who's the guy, the luchador that trained in Japan, and that's like his thing?
The luchador he trained in Japan?
No, I'm sorry. I got that backwards. The Japanese guy that trained in Mexico.
Doki?
No. A 90s guy. I can't think of it. I don't know. God damn, what's his name? Who am I thinking of? It's not Hubbo, but it's one of those guys.
Oh, you're
guys.
Thinking about Nasawa.
No, I'm not thinking about Nasawa. God damn it, I'm not going to be able to think about it.
Yeah, this is going to come to us like right when we're talking about Rita versus Mano. Yeah.
Hold on, let me go to Cage Match real quick. Let me go to CMLL, and let me go to their all-time roster in like 1998. That's kind of the era that I'm thinking of, but I can't. God, I know who it is. It's one of the guys that we like. I just can't think of their name. And as I scroll down,
they're
here,
not a Hamada student.
No, they're not. That's kind of their whole thing. Is the era after Hamada?
Gotcha. Yeah. Now I'm racking my brain.
But it's like a guy that ended up working Osaka Pro and that kind of wrestler.
Kuga?
No, oh my God, this is gonna kill me.
It's not Orihara. I know that for sure.
It's not Orihara. It's like a masked guy. Come on. Okay, let me go to 99 because 98 didn't net any results. And it's not Delphin because Delphin was trained by Hamada.
Right. Yeah. It's not.
But I'm
Delphin.
Getting Delphin's in my head because
it's not Nanawa.
It might. Is it Nanawa? Who? Whose tagline was like Lucha Renaissance?
Who's that? Lucha Renaissance? Well, it's not Nanowalk.
I got it. It was Tsubasa. That's who I'm thinking of.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I'm sorry for that diversion. I'm thinking of Tsubasa.
Never was a big Tsubasa guy personally, so no wonder it didn't come to my mind.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Very sorry about that. My point is, there was actually a point to all of that. I don't know if Shisa was training with Tsubasa. And that's how he just ended up in Mexico. I don't fully know what his backstory is, but I know he was there before Torimon came over, and he stayed there and was picked up by Ultimo.
That would make sense. I mean,
God, I'm exhausted.
I mean, like Torimon, at least within Mexico, Ultimo Dragon Gym, kind of in a way, a lot of people ended up there, even though they started elsewhere and didn't necessarily come in through the Torimon Japan intake.
Yeah, so exactly.
It would make sense, especially for Saito, someone who, I mean, you're talking about like he was there in 95 training with Rey Mendoza. That's he got in at like the peak, it feels like, at that time, you know?
Yes, I agree. So there's your IWRG update. As long as they keep on uploading Torimon matches, we'll keep on talking about them. The M2K stuff they put out last week wasn't, you know, it wasn't like a great match, but it's just fun to have all that footage. And there's a lot of 98 IWRG footage that I really want to see. So I hope they keep on doing that. Topic number two. Can we get a check-in? I know you're a very busy man. I happen to be off of work this week, so I've had way more time than usual, which means I'm dedicating a lot of time to rebuilding Vanderbilt's football program. Can I get an update on NCAA 2025 Dynasty Mode on your end?
So right now, you know, I left my children at UTSA. Like, it was just not happening there. I was looking for either making it into a thing or using it as a stepping stone. I got hired. I got poached to be the OC at Oklahoma. We are the number one team in the country, and we're about to face the Big 12 championship TCU, because yes, I did roll back the conferences.
Nice. Okay. I have not jumped from a program left. Now, I did the same thing as you. I threw in the towel on SMU, but I just started a new dynasty with Vanderbilt because I thought it's SEC, but they're not a legacy program. It has been the most fun I have had with a video game since maybe the early days of Skate 3. I am so in love. I've built these guys up through four seasons now as a total powerhouse program.
Where you consistently get them into Nashville?
We'll say
you get
that
them in there? You're getting them into Nashville?
Exactly. I've got a whole narrative in my head of, like, you know, Nashville's booming right now. Why is their college football program not booming? The Titans are bad now. Vanderbilt's where it's at. I've got four-star recruits coming in. Next year, I've got two redshirt freshman quarterbacks right now, both of whom are four stars. One is a pocket passer, just traditional quarterback. The other guy's a scrambler. I'm going to be fighting. I'm going to be causing those two guys to fight with each other next season. I can't wait. I love this game.
Yeah, my idea is, if I take, because we're number one ranked in at OU right now, I think I'm basically pulling a Rhett Lashley. I'm going to, because you know what team had a losing record this year and they might need, and mama might be calling?
Who's that?
The Miami Hurricanes.
There you go.
I might have to do that. But because of everything that's been going on with me this week, I've had a podcast that I've been sitting on. Pablo Torre talks to Michael Ryan Ruiz about the Miami NIL fund, that, like, I'm ready to embrace it and just throw all the money at it.
I love that. I love that. I'm very happy for you there. We'll check back on that in a few weeks. Final topic, real quick, Oasis reunion, yes or no?
Yes, because I feel like I feel like the Euros need something after All In. You know,
that's fair.
They're not going to have, like, their big moment next year. Let Liam and Noel, like, get into a fist fight on stage again. It's great. Like, I spent part of my morning listening to Liam clips talking about how dumb Noel is.
He's the greatest.
Yeah, just like great promo. Have you seen Liam talking about tea?
No, I have not.
He does, like, this whole minute monologue of, like, making a cup of tea. He's like, that's great. Back in the mid-90s, I would have four geezers over here doing this for me. But y'all had to go fuck off to Napster and download your music. No real fucking rock and rollers anymore.
Liam is the coolest person to ever live. Noel is, to steal one of their phrases, he is a wanker. I am an absolute Noel Gallagher and the High Flying Birds hater, whereas I've really, really enjoyed Liam Gallagher's solo stuff over the last few years. There's a video, speaking of tea, there's a video of Morrissey drinking tea with some British comedian who I don't know, and it's great for two reasons. I know nothing about tea. This is not my culture whatsoever, but at some point in the video, she hands him a tea cozy, which I don't, do you know what that is?
Yeah, it's because for your hot water pot or your teapot that's steeping, you put the tea cozy underneath it because of condensation.
Okay, yeah. But it's like, I don't know if this is all.
It's basically a trivet. It's a fancy trivet.
Okay, whatever it is, the one that Morrissey was given was like a knit sort of almost hacky sack looking thing. And Morrissey gets it, this gift from somebody who he's on her show. And Morrissey's like, this is a beanie. This is what the skateboarding kids wear. What am I going to do with this? Which is so funny. And then he also describes his daily tea regimen. And then is asked, well, do you ever go a day without tea? And Morrissey goes, I tried once. I was quite shaken. I was quite disturbed. I couldn't do it. It's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, it's something about, like, British, like, rock stars. Like, the way that they, like, especially if they came out from the 80s and the 90s, that it is the part of the culture that, like, I guess at Britain, it like went on further, whereas like in 1999, we all basically stopped in the United States. Like they let their rock stars play a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And I feel like then you get just like weird stuff like
that. Very much so. So I'm a huge Oasis guy. I'm in on this. I don't think this is that giant of a scoop, but they allegedly have shows in the U.S. planned. I have heard rumors of what they want to do, at least in this market, and they have big plans, which I was a little taken aback by when I heard what the idea is, but it seems like there might be demand there. So more power to them. And Mike, I think on that note, I think I'm finally ready to talk wrestling, but we're not going to lead off with Dragon Gate this week.
That's right. We have a bit of a Dragon System buffet this week, because the most important show in the world over the last week wasn't at Arena Mexico, was not at Wembley Stadium. It was not even televised, Case. The Glade Premium House Show in Corken Hall was last Wednesday. This was the much bandied and ballyhooed, non-streamed, non-televised. The only people that were going to watch it were those who bought tickets to go see Glade. And so happens they managed to sell 10 more tickets that way. But we're going to lead off talking about Glade because they had this show and then they proceeded to announce a lot of stuff coming up over the next few weeks. And I don't know if it's something where the two of us kind of, I don't like the fact that Glade is this bad, but we have to kind of just get into it. 702 spectators, like that is like the absolute ceiling, because if you look at their All Japan and their DDT shows over the last year, it was only like 20 more than that. Like it's real, real bad, real bad. But Case, where should we go from here about this overall Glade topic? Where do you want to start off?
Well, I have a question for you, and it's not a baiting question. I don't mean for it to come across as try hard or cringy or anything other than I think it's a genuine question that three quarters of the way through the year we need to have, because so many people, and I don't think they're wrong for this, so many people are penciling in AAA as the worst promotion of 2024. And to be clear, you're going to get no pushback from me.
No, it's, they have done enough that I think that without a stiff defense, you can make that claim.
Yes. Yeah. I get it. No argument. I understand exactly where you're coming from, but there is this weird caveat with AAA where the Vampiro thing is drawing. It's the only thing they have that draws. They're terrified of losing it because then they will have absolutely nothing left on the table. So they
will have a Latin lover versus heel invading managers unit.
Yes.
As their thing. If they don't stop promoting Vampiro's never ending retirement tour, that's all they have.
It's the only thing they have, but it is something that is working. Now, the in-ring quality of Glade is higher than AAA, but not by much. You know, throughout their history, I mean, 2021, 2022, 2023, there were a lot of Glade matches that I enjoyed. There were whole shows that I thought were good shows. That is not happening this year. I looked at my spreadsheet, and I'm all caught up. By the time most people hear this, there will be another show that will have aired. I obviously have not seen that yet, but I've caught up on everything through July. Mm-hmm. I have seven Glade matches at 4 stars or higher, with the best one being the Lindemann anniversary match, him versus T-Hawk from April. I have Fulmita and Kaito Ishida at 4.25 stars from January. I have the Daimonji and Ito no ropes match from April, that at 4.25. And then just a smattering of 4-star matches, multi-man matches from January, March, and May.
Sure.
The other component to this is that they just ran this Corken Hall show that we'll never see. The whole deal is that you had, you know, in order to see it, you had to be there. They drew 700 fans. This is a lifeless promotion. They have nothing going for them.
It might be the most toxic promotion working today, Case. Like, imagine if you took like a lot of the people involved in this promotion, and this isn't a strong heart stick, this isn't anything against Shima, but imagine you like you put those scenarios and these people into a promotion in the United States. It's just a promotion that everyone looks at as a car wreck.
Completely. Absolutely. All I'm saying is this might be the worst promotion of 2024, because they don't have the blow-away match this year. The No Ropes match was very good. Lindemann and T-Hawk, I thought, was great. But even last year, they were just so much better in the ring. And now they don't have the momentum of Tamura. They didn't cash in on the Kaz Hayashi retirement. They have no momentum. They have nothing going for them. And it honestly looks like it is only going to get worse.
Yeah, because I look at this show, and at the very least, there is stuff here that I'm intrigued with, but the limiter is on. Like, I would want to see the Ridgeway and Minoru Tanaka G-Infinity match against Kaito Ishida and Tetsuya Izuchi. That's those are four guys I really, really like. Minoru Tanaka is probably the most consistently good person, I feel like, in this promotion that's not a Strong Hearts member. Like,
yes, and that is the correct caveat. Yes.
And they had like what looks like a 20 minute match that maybe could have made that list, because case my list of four and a quarter star matches are just or notebook matches in Glate this year are the No Ropes match and the L. Lindemann anniversary match. That's it. That's
yeah, because you're not really watching Yamamura matches, and he is in most of the matches that I thought were great.
Yeah, that's a me thing.
Here's the sick part of all this is right before we started recording, I went back and watched the July show from Osaka, and I had assumed, because I knew about this card going in because of the main event, because it was Lindemann and T-Hawk and Yamamura versus Billy King Kid, Hubbo, and Ryoya Matsufasu, which I'm in on paper. What a great looking match. I, in my mind, had just assumed that that was one of the shows that was also going to be like a premium event where they weren't going to put it on YouTube, because I saw zero people talk about it. I mean, absolutely no one discussing this show. And it wasn't until today that I realized it was actually on YouTube. And the main event is very good, like 3.5 stars. I could bump it up to 3.75. The best guy in the match is Yamamura. He's unbelievable. And it is both refreshing and heartbreaking at the same time that he is their best wrestler this year.
Yeah, and you have this overwhelming storyline that's continuing to play out. Ryuichi Kawakami basically started this summer by blowing up Ladette President Suzuki and got fake fired, and now has been doing an invader angle where he's brought down people like Jun Tancho involved with this, where like Jun Tancho has been someone that for like years I've been wanting them to do something with, and it's just like, oh, you're now a flunky that just uses brass knucks and it ruins every match. And you end this house show with Chris Weiss showing up, so you're finding a new level of toxicity into your promotion. And you have now three former or currently heel units in this roster. Between Bulk Orchestra is now fully face at this point, but they started off as the major heels. Black Generation International, I guess they're now tweener, and you have now the Anti-Glay Monsters, and it's just like, what are you doing when you have three heel units? And case, I don't know if you caught this from the Osaka show from this week, Yamamura has left a Strong Hearts. Strong Hearts are just now the original three at this point.
And honestly, that's what they should do, because one of my big complaints this year is it's not like AAA where they're throwing a million things against the wall and none of it is sticking. They're just not doing anything. It reminds me a little bit, and I hate to speculate this way because I don't want anybody to not have work, but it's like I'm watching October, November, December 2000 WCW, where certain people know this is the end of the line, and they're just not doing anything. And so to set Yamamura free, again, morally, I have some apprehension towards it. You are, you know, completely putting on the brakes, which I don't blame you at all. But at least, like, if I was in the room, I would say, well, can we build something around Yamamura? Because he's now hotter than T-Hawk, and he's bigger than Lindemann, and we might actually have something here. And even if the story, this overarching story from 2017 to now, is a perverse story, and it's a dark one, and it's one that if it eventually backfires on us, is going to make us look very, very bad, it is an incredibly inspirational story. So Yamamura might be the guy that they should rally around. But then you go to the Osaka show where they're running the big Osaka building in October. And this is what I really wanted to talk to you about, was The two matches that are announced, it's Ishida and Azuchi versus Zachary Wentz and Trey Miguel. And no disrespect to Trey Miguel, I've probably reviewed more of his matches than any single reviewer because of all of his time in AAW. But that is obviously the lesser of the Rascals pairing. You know, Desmond Xavier is booked. I get it. He's elsewhere. Good for him. But that match is selling zero tickets. And then you have Tamura and Parker Bordeaux. And that can't, I mean, that can't headline Osaka number two, let alone the big building number one.
I mean, it can't headline any of the buildings that they run, to be honest. Like, and there's always the idea about the big, scary foreign invader. I mean, hell, Dragon Gate did that this year, and they proved me wrong about Johnny Valletta. Like, you can do that, but it took Dragon Gate had Johnny Valletta around for, what, 3 months killing everyone before they gave him a title match?
Like, I mean, we were salivating for that match by the time we got there, and we obviously had our concerns, and unfortunately the match didn't really live up to what had been built up by that point. But yeah, no, it was 4 months by that point, January through April, and that match at the beginning of May, where Valletta was going to every single town, doing the same exact thing, and it was working, and it was getting over, and you know, quite honestly, I miss him to some degree, and I think at some point he'll be back, it's just a matter of when, but Bordeaux's going to come in cold, and with all due respect to him, because I actually think he has talent and might be too much of a punching bag at times, he is no Gianni Valletta.
Yeah, and it's when you like look at the company now, they also announced coming in to Glate, Sam Adonis, El Hijo del Vikingo, and it sounds like with how things are slowing down with Vikingo, it might actually be his in-ring debut return. Octagon Jr., who of course worked there for their July 1 anniversary show, and Fabi Apache. That is more solidifying of the AAA relationship, which I don't know if you caught this. There was a show that was about to happen that was semi-main event by Espy, Ataku, and the former Czech Shimatani, Nobusan, that I think it got canceled. And like that, but you're starting to see like those three guys actually getting booked in AAA, and we're seeing it kind of pay off there, but I just don't know necessarily. I look at like Hijo del Vikingo being in Glate feels like such a massive miss on so many different levels. And I get it. It's a way that he can probably, if it so turns out that this is before his Mexican return, then he's able to, you know, work it out. I know that there was some there were some concerns about him rushing back a little early. So that all makes like a lot of sense to me in that regard. But I mean, dude, it's you look at like what they have announced and how this promotion has gone. They've been clawing to get anything other than the absolute minimum of disaffected former Dragon Gate fans and people who still believe that UWF is a viable like thing in 2024. What's going to do when you add in people from AAA who are just going to be like dropped in like El Hijo del Vikingo coming into this promotion should be treated like the biggest thing possible. And it's just like, oh yeah, but don't worry. Parker Boudreaux is in the main event and Edeon Arena, Osaka and Case. Unless someone pulls a singlet off the wall, which we cannot discount at this point. Is this even a show that's going to break 1500?
No. And that is what I was getting to is I am now putting the odds of Yoshino doing a comeback match here at not very likely, but not unlikely. I think we are strictly in the likely category of Yoshino wrestling on this show.
Doubtful. Well, we've moved it from being counted out to doubtful. If we're using,
I would even
the
go
IR
higher.
Report.
I think probable, it is. I think maybe. It is probable. Let's do the NFL Sunday injury report here.
Right. Yeah.
I think it is probable. The main event. Well, I guess what we assume is the main event, the G-Rex match, is such a dud of a match that they have to have something else. And it can't be Kawakami because that story's not over.
It can't be Chris Weiss because he doesn't draw ever.
No, there's got to be something else. And maybe their idea is that it's Vikingo and it's Marufuji and it's Shima against whoever else. And they're going to do, you know, all-star six-man tag, whatever. I don't think that's drawing 1,500. And I think Vikingo in Japan should be a big deal, but I don't think that's drawing 1,500 people to the big building. I don't know if it would sell out the small building. I think Yoshino's coming back here, and part of me saying this is cynical, but I say it as a cynical wrestling fan, not as somebody that even covers Dragon Gate, because I, as I've stated many times, you know, I want Glate to be great. I would love to be able to invest time and energy and emotion into this product. I just can't with the way it's presented. But I started thinking about Yoshino coming back today, and thank God that when Doi went freelance in 2021, he went All Japan, DDT, Dragon Gate, and didn't get sucked into Gleet, who I imagine at some point would have made him an offer or there would have been some contact there. I don't know that for sure. But what a bummer it would be to not only lose what he's currently doing with Paradox and Dragon Gate, but to lose out on possibly the All Japan stuff and the DDT stuff and just the general joy that Naruki Doi has brought on this year by him being a great wrestler and them doing a half-assed Speed Muscle reunion on this show. That is all I could think about today.
Yeah, I guess if my suspicion, and we'll talk about one way is that our suspicions have been wrong over the last week, but my suspicion really is that you, because Yamamura is kind of that figure, do you think that they try to do Yamamura and Yoshino maybe with Soma Watanabe and then get like three bulk orchestra guys? And that's what they're going to try to do with that.
God, that doesn't sound good.
No, it doesn't. But like, I feel like they're going to try to pin those two together.
No, I think it'll be Yoshino and Shima. Now, they might be against Yamamura and somebody, but I can't see Yoshino wrestling and Shima not being in that match.
That's fair. But yeah, no, absolutely. Like, Naruki Doi, I feel like you real, and it was something that like really came off as we get into like his homecoming show and all of that. And Alan did incredible audio about both him and Dragon Kid right after Kobe World, the Pro Wrest Paradise at PW Torch VIP. But you really like look at the guy, and I feel that this has been something for me at least over the last, really the last like 48 months for me with Naruki Doi. I've grown to have such more of a deeper appreciation for it. I get a sense seeing what Doi has done that he could smell a rotting fish from a mile away and saw this and was like, I want no part of that, because he's worked everywhere else. Literally, he has worked everywhere else. He has worked PPP. Like, there's not very many places left in the greater Japanese wrestling ecosystem other than if he wanted to show up in Noah or New Japan. Like, that's really it other than Glate. Like, it's very now. I feel like that we could probably, by just looking at where he's worked at and the fact that he has not worked there, that's a very deliberate choice at this point.
I would completely concur. You know, again, I'm just so glad if they did reach out to him that he sniffed that out. And, you know, now he's having the best run of his career, and he's doing it, you know, in his 24th year, in his 40s, and that just would have not been possible. So we'll keep tabs on that, because I am fully on the it's probable that Yoshino is wrestling on that show. They tested the waters on his first produce show in February. He did the 5-minute exhibition with Shima, and they will really be tempting fate. You know, they have the Yamamura thing, which, knock on wood, so far has gone well, and I really, really don't want it to go poorly. But you have to remember, you know, by the end of Yoshino's career, people were describing his physical state as being like Misawa's towards the end, you know, trouble brushing his teeth, trouble moving around, odd sleeping positions because his body hurt so much. I just worry they are going to poke the bear one too many times with severe injuries and subsequent comebacks.
No, I think that it's a awful idea, but I mean, you look at what has gone on and how things really changed over 6 years for Yoshino and his just kind of everything, I would say.
It's my greatest unanswered question is what happened, because for years, you know, everything that Saito's doing right now, we were told by people that we know and that we trust that this is going to be Yoshino. And it was across the board. It was Yoshino is in a position to eventually take over this company and insert Ryo Saito here.
Right. So maybe it was something that maybe the further he got away from Shima, the more he wanted to hang out with him. Like, at this point, that's kind of like the without knowing anything more. I mean, you know as much, if not more, about the situation than I do. And it's just weird. It's one of those big, like, unanswered questions. Like last week, when we were talking about Rewind and Rewatch, thanks for everyone for checking that one out. And if you haven't, make sure everyone sees the whole Kogan story. But how we still, like, there's so many unanswered questions about 2003. I feel like that we are going to be waiting a long time for 2018 talk, because I feel like there's a lot there that still has not really come to the surface yet. And I don't know if it ever will, to be honest.
No, I mean, look, it's you know, dojo stories and what happened between Saito and Yoshino and Kido in 2018 is kind of at the top of my list of unanswered questions that I have. Mike, do you want to talk Pro Wrestling NOAH real quick?
Yeah, let's do this. So N1 Victory, I know you've been keeping up on stuff. N1 Victory was something over the last few weeks, Case, that sadly kind of went to the wayside. They have their final, though, coming up, and a lot has been announced for it. In particular, we have the N1 Victory final. Kano versus Kaito Kiyomiya. Kaito Kiyomiya is putting on the GHC title for that match. As well, we're having a really fun six-man tag that Luis Monte, who's been over there working NOAH pretty consistently during this tour and during the tournament, he will be teaming with Galeno Del Mal and El Hijo del Dr. Wagner Jr. So he's with the Instagram grandpa's boys going up against Los Golpadores, Dragonbane, and Alphenwolf, along with Shun Skywalker. Interesting card that they are having in the big building coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't have a ton to say. I just want to point out that six-man tag is happening.
It looks awesome. Yeah,
it looks awesome. And it's a weird deal where you look at this NOAH show and, you know, Junta just worked Dragon Gate and he's in a singles match, gets Masa Tamiya. And then you've got Monte and Skywalker in the six-man tag. And then you've got Eita and Shuji Kondo in the semi-main event.
Yeah, semi-main eventing this thing, which, you know, big ups for Eita there.
It's such a bummer. It just speaks to the NOAH Juniors division that Eita and Shuji Kondo are a tag team, and I don't care that, like, their matches are never any good. And it's like, how is that possible? Oh, because it's the NOAH Junior division where things go to die. And then, you know, you look at the junior heavyweight title match, and it's Daga challenging, and he is somebody who was very good in Dragon Gate and then went back to Mexico and disappointed everybody for a few years. And then
I mean, let's be fair. He disappointed in Dragon Gate too.
I liked that run.
It was fun. I wasn't saying about anything in ring.
Oh, well, that's true. But you know, it's just, look, we're a long ways away from Mitsuharu Misawa's Pro Wrestling NOAH. This is not Green Mat NOAH anymore, but I look up and down this card and it is amazing to me the amount of influence that Dragon Gate has on their product, given that they are, you know, one of the three prestige Japanese wrestling promotions. And there's no point to that. There's no dig there. It's just really interesting to me that they gave Monte everything they gave him in the N1. And Skywalker is now in a prominent, I would argue, drawing position on this show. And they just used Junta, and Eita and Kondo are homegrown talent, and Daga was there for a long time. Daga would not be in NOAH without Eita, who he befriended in Dragon Gate. It's just very interesting to me. I don't think 20 years ago, you know, going back to 2003, which we talked about last week, I don't think it would have been possible to fathom at the time Toriumon one day influencing that era of NOAH the way that they have.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, If you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy. And order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's countrymd.com/energy.
I do have to say, though, there's a little bit of the Green Ring of Life with Manabu Soya and Tavian Heights going up against Kazuyuki Fujita and Yoshitatsu.
Boy, that's a tough one.
How has Manabu Soya looked insane in completely different ways every single time he's shown up since his injury? I thought he was going to win this thing. Like, he looked like that was, and he was like such a focus. I was like, oh, Soya has like bleach, like snow white hair. He's incredibly jacked, and I guess he's now getting the Noah push. And no, that's not happening. He's just teaming with an NXT guy.
I can't wait for Tavian Heights, who by all accounts has had a great tour.
I think he's been great when I've seen him there. Like, it makes sense. Yeah.
Seems to really enjoy Japan, seems to really enjoy the style of wrestling that he's doing over there. I can't wait for his entire experience to be ruined by Fujita sandbagging him and being an asshole and keeping Heights at NXT for forever because of the way that he's going to eat Heights alive in this match. It is the perfect way to ruin a positive trip to Japan.
I mean, at the same time, I mean, there's all the lore about old Ironhead, but at a certain point, time catches up to every person. And eventually one day, Fujita is going to do his shit to a strong enough young guy. And I'm hoping that Tavian Heights is that guy. Like, that's why I watch Fujita matches, is to see if there's finally someone who's going to snap on the guy and actually make him, like, step back.
It did not happen in Glate this year. They rolled over quite easily for old Ironhead.
Yeah, and they will continue because they think that somehow he brings people in when there's been no evidence of that for the last 25 years
of proof that it's not working.
Yeah, and not working.
What's your evidence? Oh, I don't know. The evidence? All of the numbers?
Numbers roll up to that Kazuyuki Fujita is just a very funny person who everyone just like Pride did a number on everyone. It did a number on the Japanese industry and it did a number on talent evaluation and the idea of what a star is.
And hey, a great match with Tanahashi. It was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm putting money on Tavian Heights there if they're going to scrap.
I enjoy your optimism there, Mike. I really do. We haven't talked about this. We're gonna end up doing a rewind and rewatch next week. But if that Noah six man is good, I want to carve out time for that as well. I'm actually extremely excited about that match.
Oh, absolutely, me too. After all of this case, should we talk about what exactly a Gata Miyane is?
Let's do it.
So this week we got two shows that made the network. The monthly Kobe Sambo Hall show was taken over by Japanese newscaster, entertainment host Seiji Miyane. This has been something built up throughout the last. I feel like the first time we saw Miyane was like, I know Sponge Guy was around at that point, but it was like
March or April because it was when it looked like they were going to do Shun and Shishikawa.
Yeah, yeah. So this big booked and promoted by Seiji Miyane Sambo Hall show. We'll talk about that. Naruki Doi and Nara. The one thing that we know about Naruki Doi for sure is that he loves his hometown of Nara. It was his 24th anniversary and his homecoming show this week as well. But let's kick it off with the Gate of Miyane. Absolute sellout at Kobe Sambo Hall. You could not shove another person in there, I feel like. Just overall, I think just off the top, Casey, your thoughts about this kind of unique Dragon Gate show that had a lot of everything on it, it felt like.
I was told by one of our Kobe correspondents who's been going to shows since 2018 that this was the most people they've ever seen in this building for a Dragon Gate show. So that is pre-pandemic. If it's not pre-OWE split, it is certainly very, very shortly after the split. But I was told most people that they've ever seen in this building.
Yeah, and I feel like because there was a lot on this show that that of course this did not have Jay there, that I feel like not being a native Japanese speaker, that I felt like was kind of lost with Miyane, and like he was doing like constant like stand up bits, and like they opened the show with him and one of his guys like showing his bare ass. Like there was some stuff there that wasn't necessarily with it, but it all kind of bore down into this main event match. Benkei teaming with the Great Okan versus Shun and Bushi. Ben getting the win on Bushi with the spear. But the big thing coming out around this, Shingo Takagi made an appearance at his home arena. I mean, he basically, I feel like he's still wrestled other than Korakuen Hall and Kobe Sambo Hall more so than any other building. And he came out and announced that he has in mind his ex for his 20th anniversary show coming up in 2 weeks in Yamanashi. And it's his best frenemy, Yamato. We thought Yamato might have to go help out the GM that day, but it turns out he gets a day off to go hang out with Shingo and do the New Japan show in Yamanashi.
Okay, I've been wrong about the Yamato title run every step of the way. Couldn't be happier that I've been wrong, by the way, because it's all worked out great. If they just... I thought it was going to be X until the moment of the show. I thought he was going to come out on the show. I go, well, that wouldn't make any sense. If it was Yamato, they would just announce Yamato. All right, they just announced Yamato. Works out great. I'm now extremely excited for that match.
Yeah, absolutely so. What'd you think of the main event itself? It turned into a whole lot of missed play partway through. There was a fun... it was a tone of a show that I feel like we have to talk about, that outside of this main event, no match got more than 10 minutes. It was a very light on the ring work show, I would say.
I think, and I'm going to talk extensively about this, and I want your thoughts too, because I might be on an island. I might be, and given the men involved, it's not a big surprise, I might be the high person on this main event. I thought this was one of the most fun matches of 2024. I am dying to know, and I'm going to try to find out who laid this match out, because I thought this match was absolutely brilliant. This felt like watching the best of territory wrestling mixed in with the mindset and the antics and the atmosphere of Dragon Gate the way it should be presented. I thought all four guys in the ring played their part perfectly. I thought all of the refs took great bumps. I thought the finish was marvelous. Very rarely in my life am I ever conflicted over star ratings, because if something is great, it should be 4 stars. This was not, from a work rate standpoint, a 4-star match, but I have found very few matches this year to be as enjoyable as this one was.
Yeah, I was 3.5 stars on it, but I thought it was an absolute blast. It was just, you had all the ref bumps. Miyane came in, counted the 3 count after Shun, kind of pestered him for the entire extent of his time in Dragon Gate. You had very much everything happen in it. For a show like this was absolutely the match that had to happen. You wouldn't want this to be an all-star match. You want this to kind of be getting the crowd that was not necessarily a Dragon Gate crowd. Like, there were, you saw more Miyane t-shirts than anything else. And you got to kind of show the characters, and especially Shun at this point, I feel like we've run out of superlatives for how much and how great his character work is at this point, because
I've got a new one.
Okay.
Well, let me real quick point out, Miyane is like a local broadcaster in the
national
Kobe area.
But so, he's I thought he was from, like, I looked up like that, he maybe I have the TV networks wrong. But
no, hold on, let me read my note here. He might be national, but what I was told was he's an anchorman and he got his start in Kansai. So if you mention his name to someone in Tokyo, they'll shrug, but in Kansai, he's still a big deal.
Yeah, I think at one time he was a national broadcaster, and that was the point of confusion. But yeah, he's been a guy, and a broadcaster in Japan is a lot different than a broadcaster in the United States. Like, he hosts like panel shows, stuff like that. Like, it's not like it's not like Tom Brokaw kind of newscast.
Yeah, exactly. So that's who he is, because I don't think we ever explained that. But Shun in this match, it was like watching Nick Bockwinkel. Like, it was, I hesitate to give any higher praise than that. I don't want to say Ric Flair's name in this conversation, but he has mastered the art in a way, and the two comparisons that I can make, the two contemporary comparisons I can make, are with Kenny Omega and with Tetsuya Naito. they have t-shirt mode, and it's not a critique on them by any means. We all have nights off. There's nothing wrong with that. But you know, when you saw Omega in 2016 and 2017 with the blue and pink pants and the t-shirt, or when Naito came out and kept the t-shirt on the entire match, that was their off night. That was their goofing around night. We weren't getting big match Omega. We weren't getting big match Naito. And Shun has figured out a way to not only still have the high-end matches like a Kobe World or the match with the six-man tag with Flamita in June. You know, there's endless great Shun Skywalker matches this year and every other year prior. But he's now figured out a way to essentially do high-level American TV work on these Dragon Gate spot shows in a way that no one else in Japan, I don't think, has ever really figured out the winning combination. Because even on a night like this where Shun's not doing super worker stuff, his character work is so engaging that it's still at such a higher level than what Omega or Naito were doing at times where they were rightfully considered to be the best wrestlers in the world. And it is why I continue to maintain that other than Danielson, other than Ospreay, we're dealing with the guy who is the very best at his craft right now. And it's because of stuff like this, where, again, this match was, in a way, nothing special. But I feel like I'm watching, somebody in 1985 on American TV doing their very best character work, but then also implementing it in a way in this promotion with this specific style and atmosphere that just makes total sense.
Yeah, and it is really a position where I think when we talk about how Dragon Gate has basically, for a lack of better words, over the last 6 years, has tried to figure out what they are for the next 30 years. You see someone like him who's able to kind of lead this way, and you get a lot of confidence in the future. Like, weirdly, my big takeaway from both this show and by the show in Nara was, wow, all right, for as much as sometimes I get a little bit existential about, okay, what's going to happen when there's no more Susumu around or things like this, you see someone like Shun be able to really show, like, this is how we can handle these kind of shows. Like, this is the kind of performance that your leaders you want to have. It gives you a lot of confidence in where the promotion's going to go, and at least as long as Shun Skywalker's a part of it.
And also, and I want to get back to Shun, but on that note, credit to Ben, because 5 years ago, Ben K might have had more cachet with the American fan base than he does now, but could you imagine Ben 5 years ago in this environment? He couldn't talk. He couldn't cut promos. That was the entire gimmick. And man, I thought he fit like a glove in this environment.
Yeah, and it's really showing his own confidence and like how the last few years he was able to kind of find the thing that let him become a relatively good talker. And I think you also have someone in this match in Great O'Khan who, in a lot of ways, I look at Great O'Khan and he's never going to be a 1 or a 1A. I feel like it's just not who he is, and that's not the hand that he has been dealt, and that's not what the company wants. But you have someone who has like this level of like ability and of course like his amateur career, but he's been able to like add to it with just like odd things about him that have given him like so much character, like to the extent that like he has like one of the biggest gacha games as a sponsor on his tights, and that's like celebrated, and it's like, oh yeah, Great O'Khan, he's actually just a huge geek. And it really, I feel like at a time, really endeared him with fans that he wouldn't necessarily get. And I think seeing him team with Ben, especially Ben going through like his own journey and in discovering charisma in a way, I comes like, maybe Ben, you could get something from working with Great O'Khan a little bit. Like you're on the way, like you're still like, I mean, 2019 to 2024, night and day. But you have a guy right here who has been able to do that voyage himself, and there's a lot of things he can get out of it.
I guess we had this conversation 2 weeks ago when we talked about some of the New Japan guys that we aren't high on, or at least aren't as high as others are on. I'm always blown away by the assessment that New Japan has a brighter future than Dragon Gate, because I mean, even in Z-Bratz, just forget the potential of a future babyface Shun Skywalker turn. Even in this iteration, which has now existed for 2.5 years, which for a Dragon Gate heel is a very, very long time, I still feel like they are only at the tip of the iceberg with Shun, and that's not to mention, again, Junior and Tanaka and the kids beneath them, but you have Shun, and you have Ben, and you have Yoshioka, and Strong Machine J always carries a giant asterisk with him, and we'll see what comes of Kakuta, and it's just like, oh my god, it's still an embarrassment of riches. And I think the thing that is hindering this promotion more than anything right now is not the talent, it's the budget. It's the actual presentation of these shows, because they don't have the glossy look of a Wrestle Universe show, and they don't have the lighting rig of a New Japan show. And I think the thing that's hurting Dragon Gate right now is literally just how the shows look, more so than any of the components that are happening in the wrestling ring.
Did you notice that there were new cameras, at least for the Miyane show?
I did not, actually.
Yeah, no, it was very clear to me that they were using better stuff.
And
it,
that's good.
It might be linked to Miyane's broadcasting job. Like, they might be filming that as well. Because you had a Kobe Sambo Hall show that was not just hard cam.
That I did notice.
There were things that were done on the show that Nara did not have. But that's also... we got to see kind of like what Dragon Gate could be if they kind of upped the game in some certain aspects this weekend, and then we kind of saw what Dragon Gate kind of is with a doing a show on a stage of a hard cam, you know, like on a theater. So I thought that it's something where I look at how the show went, and overall it's such an enjoyable show. Like, this was not a show you're watching for the star ratings. You're watching to see how everything kind of is. You see the pairs, you see the second generation versus former natural vibes, you see the hunks versus the vets, you see Cyber Kong versus Big Boss Shimizu. And you know I did mention that there was not a lot of ring time on the show, but like, I guess I didn't like fully make my point there. It was not needed on
no
that. Like,
no.
You had a 2-minute 20-second Daiki Yanagiuchi versus Kota Minoura match. That was exactly what it needed to be. It was perfect.
Let me real quick go back to the main event. I just want to break down the ref bumps here real quick for those that haven't seen the match, because I think this is worth noting, because I don't think I've ever seen a match fully structured like this that was so effective at getting the celebrity involved in a way that wasn't annoying. So Yagi starts the match out as the referee, and about halfway through, Ben goes for a corner spear, Shun shoves Yagi into the way. Okay, down goes Yagi, we all follow. Nakagawa comes out, which, you know, he's obviously had his health problems. He doesn't tour, but he still refs these Kobe shows. Nakagawa is, and I mean this with objectivity, the greatest referee bumper of all time. He comes in and takes a code breaker from Bushi, which gets a crazy pop. That sends out the newer referee with the fluffy hair.
Kashi-san.
Thank you. He comes out. He gets missed by Bushi. When he gets missed by Bushi, I don't know if you noticed this, but over in the entryway, UT is outside of the curtain. He's just in the crowd watching this match, and he throws his hands on his head in a way that seemed so genuine and so like, oh my god, what are we going to do now? That's three ref bumps. And then they bring in Miyane, Ben Spears, Shun Skywalker, and they count the pin that way. It reminded me of that Taru and Stalker versus Susumu and Kanda hair match that we watched for the M2K podcast we did in February, where that felt like Memphis got transported to Cork and Hall for one night. This was, I don't know what the territory comp is here, maybe Mid-South, where it was just so much nonsense and so much ballyhoo, and it all just, by the end of it, it was just perfect. It was really, to me, one of the defining Shun Skywalker matches. You know, if we were going to do a best of comp of his career from 2016 to now, it's not making the top 15 best matches he's ever had, but it's on that bonus disc as like a, hey, if you enjoyed those, you're really going to get a kick out of this.
Yeah, no, it was the most fun 3.5-star match I've had in a long time.
Like, yeah, it just really, really enjoyable. So those are my thoughts on the main event. And where do you want to go from here?
Yeah, let's talk about the semi-main. The Art Moving Center presents Handsome Guys versus Old Guys. Yamato, BB Hulk, Hyo, and Dragon Daya are the hunks. Mochi, Fuji, Kanda, and visiting Taru Nohashi are the old men. DDT from Daya on Kanda here. I don't know what it is. Whenever I see Taru Nohashi, I get put in a good mood case.
He is at the very top, and this is Bill Simmons-esque commentary. he is at the very top of the "Hey, I like that guy" list of just a wrestler you see. You don't know why you're as connected to him as you are, but every time you see him, you go, "Hey, I like that guy." And that is Taro Nohashi.
Yeah, I just like that guy. Not a whole lot to the match, I felt like.
It's actually my biggest complaint of the night is while this match lasted, and it only went 7 minutes, I thought it was fantastic. And I think the missed opportunity on this show is not having one match that went out of its way to be really, really great. And given the way that this match started, I thought we were halfway to a really great match, and then it just ended. And that is the one thing that I think they missed out on here is you had your fun with Cyber Kong, you had your fun in the Battle Royal, Minoru versus Yanagiuchi served its purpose. Main event was what it was, which was phenomenal. But where was the, hey, this is Dragon Gate, if this is your first time here, this is what we do differently sort of match? I think they were missing that from this show, and this seemed to be the one that had all the potential. And it was super, super fun, but I just thought it should have been twice the length.
Yeah, whereas the second gen versus Natural Vibes, former Natural Vibes members match could have been that, it kind of turned into a, instead of being the match, it's like, this is Dragon Gate, it became a very referential match about Natural Vibes stuff and like doing the, and everyone kind of turning on people in a way, and like Natural Vibes members kind of playing off of that in a manner that I don't think had the opportunity to be a standout match because you had that in that trappings. Whereas, yeah, no, the Atomico felt like it had the lane, especially for someone like Nohashi. For a guy of his size, he always bumps around surprisingly well and is willing to fly around. Like, you could have had, like, I'm still intrigued by the idea of what Daya versus Nohashi would look like. Like, you give him 10 minutes. I have no idea.
Look, I wish Nohashi would do all the Kobe shows and some of the Tokyo shows. I wish he was just around more.
Absolutely. Before this, we had a, this was the Summer Main, so there was intermission. Before intermission, it was announced we have the next debut date for a new generation wrestler. It is the debut of Akihiro Sahara coming in Kobe next month.
Love it. This is the guy who was as wide as a doorframe. I cannot wait for him.
His Twitter profile photo is perfect.
It's fantastic. This is, you know, another thing to be excited about. You have the very hyped Corkin debut coming up here next week, but also everyone that has sort of an investment in the Dragon Gate Young Boys, you know, there's a group of sickos in the extended universe. And for as great as the kid in Corkin might be, I think everybody that I know is kind of going like, yeah, what about the kid at Kobe? He's kind of built weird, right?
I mean, I'm right now looking at his Twitter profile photo. He has like the unsure smile and he barrel chested young man. Barrel chested. He will not be skipping over to G something anytime soon with the way he looks.
It reminds me a little bit of when Shoya Sato was around, and you know, Don Fuji gets a kick out of beating up young wrestlers just in general, but Sato brought something to the table that created almost a level playing field with Fuji. And I get the sense that Fuji and this kid are going to do so many sumo spots over the next year, and it's going to be enjoyable literally every single time that I see it.
Yeah, I can't wait until we get the Beefy Boy series.
Yep, it's coming.
It is something where, like, I'm intrigued, but what Sahara versus even Ishin is. Like, Ishin should, like, tear through the guy, but what if he's too big?
No, there's a lot of possibilities there. I always have to slow my roll because he's going to debut, he's going to be great, and I'm going to want him to do something immediately. I don't see that happening with him, but I get the sense that just because of the way that he's built, because of the way that he's shaped, that his young boy matches are going to be so different and by proxy so enjoyable.
So keep an eye out. Akihiro Sahara coming in the next Kobe show. Let me pull that up real quick. End of the month. So on September 29th in Kobe Sambo Hall, the debut of Akihiro Sahara. What'd you think of the second gen versus former Natural Vibes match? Because I was really... It was so referential. It kind of like I what you were saying about wanting the 8-man tag. This was the one where I felt like could have really gotten and been like the standout match of the show, and it just kind of not ended up being that way. Though Kamei wins with the JFK crucifix on Mochi Jr. and done in a manner where it's interesting where Mochizuki Jr. is slotting right now. Like, that was my big takeaway. It's like, okay, Jr. is still lower than Kamei. Did not see that coming.
I thought this was a very good weekend for Strong Machine J, and that's maybe an odd takeaway to have from this, but I thought both in this match and the Nara show, I was gravitated towards J more than just about anybody on the show.
That's fair. That's fair. I can totally see that. What'd you have on it? I came in at like 3 on the dot.
3.25, but that's also, I think, in part just due to the vibes of this show.
Mm-hmm. We had the Daikiana Yuji versus Kota Minora match. Before that, Kota is still wrestling in a t-shirt. Daiki had a bit of offense, but then the referee got distracted. Low blow, Golden Rose.
So jumping ahead here to Korakuen, Daiki's in the opening match. He's wrestling Punch Tamanaga. Are we finally going to do something with this guy in September?
I mean, I look at this card, man, and that's definitely... You don't put a guy up against Punch Tamanaga unless you're doing something with him. Like, that's like the one weird thing about Punch Tamanaga. Someone's in a singles match against him. Something's happening.
And I can't entirely rule out turning him heel.
No.
But I just want something. He's so good. I really am getting into his work as much as I'm getting into Rita's work. And you know, maybe not to the degree of Junior's work, but still, he's very good. And I'm just starting to get worried that they don't see that in him, which is crazy. Because I think if you gave him a haircut and gave him a new look, he could look more credible than he does now. It's just a matter of when are they going to do that.
Yeah, for me, it's really, he needs the image change. He looks like a dweeb. And
he does, but it's worked because I think he's been a dweeb for so long now that it's like, oh, that's our dweeb. You know, he's going to hit the amazing Tope Suicida, and then he's going to lose. And it's a formula that has worked for me, but I'm ready for more now.
That's fair. We had a special Miyane Rumble, which everyone was in the ring before we started. Ginki Horiguchi, Sachi Okoboy, Kagetora, Mandai Ryu, Punch Tomonaga, UT, La Estrella, Ryoya Tanaka, Hoho Lun, and Kai. Came down to Kai and Ryoya, and it was the Ryoya show up until he was going for all of his crazy pinfalls, but then Kai got him with the authorized Gennosuke clutch to win the Miyane Rumble in 6 minutes and immediately started taunting Seiji Miyane.
If you start this match when it's just UT, Tanaka, and Kai, and you watch the last 2 or 3 minutes where it's just those three guys, you would think this was as good as the Casino Gauntlet match from All In, because it is really quite the spectacle with Tanaka pinning UT, which gives a huge reaction, and then Kai coming in. And it's been a few years now since Kai's been Dreamgate champion, so it's been a few years now since Kai's ever had to do like a flash pin sequence, and he can still do it, and he's still very, very good at it, and it made me want to see him and Tanaka in a singles match.
Yeah, like at the end, the crowd was really behind Tanaka. It really kind of felt like, oh, I was pulling for Tanaka to get the win. Like, it seemed like that could have been a moment. Not a Wembley moment, but a Miyane moment.
No, but I'm glad they did what they did, because I get the feeling. And, again, I was wrong about this because I thought it was Yamato versus Kai at Dangerous Gate, no questions asked. They still need something for Gate of Origin, which is 2 weeks away. And it might be a case where they gave Kai this win. They keep him in quotations hot. And all of a sudden we're looking at Yamato and Kai at Gate of Origin. That may happen. That may not happen. But while there's a babyface champion and while it's specifically Yamato, I think giving Kai wins, no matter the context, is not a bad thing.
No, I'm with you on that. And I think with Kai in this kind of position, he was the one to kind of go like, you forgot about my move there, young guy. So it worked out pretty well there. The second longest match on the card was match 2. And this should not be a surprise. That Ultimo in it. So Susumu Yokosuka, Madoka Kakuta, and Rita. So this was where Miyane was getting everyone on the card. Versus Ultimo Dragon, Dragon Kid, and Luis Monte, DK getting the win on Rita.
I get the sense that next year when we do SFM 50, so this would be SFM 50 for 2025, that Rita is going to be a top 50 worker in the world. I think he is trending that direction very, very quickly.
Yeah, and it was really kind of fun how like the finishing stretch was, instead of the Doible, it was an Apache punch into the Bible.
Oh, what a fantastic finish.
Yeah, it was one of those things that when it happened, I was like, that for a match like this, congratulations, you got an extra quarter star.
I almost bumped it up a half. It was a great looking Apache punch at that.
And then Miyane got Ultimo's mask. He was very hyped about it.
Of course.
And then the opener, Big Boss Shimizu versus Cyber Kong. The pineapple bit, sickeningly over. I mean, that's when you can really tell what kind of crowd it is. Is like, oh, Cyber Kong coming out of the pineapple. Like, are they going to pop huge for it? Or are they going to be like, oh, yeah, that's what you do? They went nuts for it. But it was a shot put slam from Big Boss Shimizu to get the win in the Battle of the Super Heavyweights.
Well, how long... I guess he wasn't even doing the pineapple gimmick by the end of Cyber Kong itself. So for a lot of people, this is probably the first time they ever saw that in person.
Yeah, that is true. If you're someone who is a rotational or like has like kind of gotten into Dragon Gate, you probably have never seen him, one, masked, or two, as anything other than the shut up guy.
Yeah, because he's been on masked since, what, 2018?
Thereabouts, yeah.
I think it was 18. So yeah, that's quite a while. And
Masaki Mochizuki, teach me how to wrestle. That was only 6 years ago.
Remember when like Doyen Yoshida was a really emotional Dragon Gate story 4 years ago?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll be your Yoshi.
God, that was good. That is really fun. I hadn't thought about that in a while. And then it all like, it's just another weird wrinkle of Gold Class is you had this really emotional story with Doyen Yoshida.
Yeah.
And then he just got just absolutely shoved aside and like hit by a car with the Gold Class logo on it. And it was like, no, we're doing this now. Never mind Takashi Yoshida, go away. We're doing Kaito Ishida's thing. And that was just the end of it.
Yeah, it was just, I mean, that's kind of Yoshida's kind of lot in life, it feels like.
It served its purpose, but it felt like there could have been a larger payoff there with Gold Class at some point, and it just never happened.
This is going to sound weird. In my mind, this is a whole Mandela effect thing. I feel like Takashi Yoshida was a member of Team Boku. He wasn't.
No, but I understand why you say that.
Right, because it does definitely feel like the kind of thing that he would have got himself caught up in with Naruki Doi. Yeah. Yeah, Naruki Doi was in Team Boku.
He was. It's what makes the Doi thing so remarkable is he was... Doi was my Flair Thez winner in 2020. In 2021, it looked like he was going to retire. Mm-hmm. And then he took some time off. He came back. And it was like, oh, he's fun in All Japan. Oh, look at him go. And now he's, you know, top 10 wrestler in the world this year.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm just enthralled by Naruki Doi. Remember, I was like the big Naruki Doi, not a great singles wrestler person a long time ago.
Well,
how wrong I was.
But you're not wrong, because 2020 completely changed the way we look at his entire career, because he got redemption on what was a bad Dreamgate run. And it's not like even in the throes of, you know, 2013 through 2016, where you have more Western eyeballs on Dragon Gate at that point than any other time, he would have a four-star match with Yoshino, and, you know, he had, like, that's the thing, I'm trying to think of
John
even
Moxley.
During that era. Well, yeah, the Moxley, but even, like, I'm thinking post-DG USA, so
fair.
13 through 16, you know, Ustream and Nico Nico and just free Dragon Gate wrestling being widely accessible, he had, you know, a great match with Yoshino on a pay-per-view, but I'm trying to think of the great Doi singles matches from that time period, and I'm coming up blank.
It wasn't a Yamato match either.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. It wasn't until he beat Ben, which was a phenomenal match, and then he had the great match with KZ, and then he had the great match with Susumu that everybody forgets about because the world ended a day after that, and then the Eita match, which is still one of the best pandemic wrestling matches that happened, and it completely, like, those four matches just completely changed the way we look at Doi's entire career.
Yeah, I need to, like, get to a point where I feel the need to, like, reassess 2020, because I have a feeling that my opinion of Naruki Doi will go up even higher when I start rewatching his title run. I just have not felt like I need to get into COVID era Dragon Gate.
Well, the good news is the only COVID match he has is the Eita match.
That is true.
Because KZ
true.
And, I mean, Susumu show was weird because it was like, hey, come and see us, but chill out and like maybe spread out, but like the and show's the happening.
The world's falling apart, and I mean, we still have the show here, guys.
Yeah,
I mean,
but like, come to Osaka, hang out, see what's going on. But it was, I mean, even watching those shows was a very weird feeling, and that was at a point where there were a lot more English speakers or English adjacent speakers in Japan. That we could talk to that were going like, yeah, it's really scary. We're being told not to leave any building there. It's just bad. It's just bad. And then it got way worse. And, you know, we are where we are now. But, you know, the KZ match was in front of a red hot Korakuen crowd that was stuffed to the gills. And, you know, the Susumu match had a hot crowd. And the Eita match eventually got there, even with all the restrictions in place.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But that was Gate of Miyane. Definitely would want to see what comes out of the mind of Seiji Miyane next time if they come back for it. It was an overwhelming success of a show. I feel like from the Dragon Gate side that it's an easy win. And I think you're getting someone who's a local in the area celebrity. These Kobe Sambo Hall shows, you know, they're better than what they used to be years ago, Case. But
oh my God, yes.
But like, sometimes you need to shake them up a little bit. It was nice when they do the fan appreciation shows. Why not do one of the ones, especially right the month after Kobe World? Like, you're not going to, like, you'd anticipate a bit of a dip. Like, if you look at it, like, historically, like, whenever they have, like, their big shows for, like, the next few months, it's a little bit of a dip afterwards. The perfect idea to completely cut that out, I felt like. I want them to revisit this again next year.
I really hope they do it again. You know, the way to think of this show, first of all, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It the show flies by. It's super fun. It's going to put a smile on your face. But we all know that in All Japan, the Saito homecoming shows are this unmitigated business success that doesn't really exist in Japan right now. Because even if the arrow is pointing up for any promotion, it's maybe up 1% year over year, or it's up 3% year over year. You know, they're all still fighting for the same crumbs that they were fighting for in 2022 and 2023. Nobody has had outright growth since coming back from a non-COVID-restricted Japan. This is one of those shows like the Saito show where you can go, oh my God, just, you know, what a home run in a weird way. I know there were, you know, 1,000 people there, but in a weird way, it should be looked at as one of the more successful business ventures in Japan this year, you know, much like those Saito shows, because normally they're doing what, you know, 500, 600 in Kobe, and the building looks full enough and the lights are off and we all go on our way and move on to the next show. But this was a complete and total sellout before the day of the show. Like I said at the start of this review, I had people that were going to shows in 2018 telling me they've never seen this many people in the building before. I mean, this is an arrow pointing up with, you know, 1,000% growth almost. It was really, really nice to see.
Absolutely. Did you want to get into Nara? Should we talk a little bit more about Naruki Doi first?
Well, I mean, look, it's Doi's 24th anniversary this year. It really hit me watching this show. And I'm a little panicked because I don't think I'm going to have time to write anything extensive for Shingo's 20th anniversary, which makes me feel like I'm doing a disservice. Not that my writing is this otherworldly thing, but I like sitting down and being able to eulogize these people in a certain way. I don't know if I'm going to have time to do it for Shingo. I'm going to try to get something done. But for Doi's 25th anniversary, there should be something done. There, for lack of a better term, should be some sort of eulogizing that is done, because I think he's worked for so long and he's worked so many places and he's been good in so many places that everybody has a Naruki Doi story to tell. So no, I don't have much more to add on just Doi as a wrestler. That'll come next year, because I think I have a lot that I want to say, just not now.
No, that's entirely fair. I feel like that, especially with like Doi and the homecoming that we had. So this was the next day in Nara Centennial Hall. Like, just to get like a sense of like when we talk about business wins, this was 5:36, and in a building that Dragon Gate probably got a good deal on because they did not fill it up whatsoever. But so that's like my mindset, at least with that. But I came away from the show like feeling very optimistic, if only for you had a semi-main event that you had Gold Class D-Courage versus Big Hug. They've been kind of doing these matches across Japan, And did you see how insane the crowd was to try to get the autographs for Dragon Daya and Madoka Kakuta? And
yeah,
how much of it was just kids there doing it? Like, more so than anyone else on the show other than Naruki Doi. When I saw like that happen, I was like, oh, the new fans are coming. Like, it's going to it could happen. Like, it gave me a lot of heart from that. And that was, like, one of my big takeaways from a Nara show that, at least for me, like, we talked about how sometimes the biggest impediment for Dragon Gate is just the fact that it is an independently run promotion with, like, the production that comes with that. That was on full display here because this was – I hated the theater. I hated how they did the entrances. I hated the hard cam. It just made the show feel less than what it should have been, which had an excellent main event with Naruki Doi, Dragon Kid, and Yamato. Like, it was one of those things. Was after Miyane feeling one way, it kind of brought me back down to earth real fast.
Well, that's the problem, is that we watched Miyane right before this. And if this was a weekend where it was only the Nara show, or it was Nara and then a double shot in Fukuoka, I think we would have all been okay and probably thought more of this show than we ended up thinking of it. But it was a fine show. It just had a very poor atmosphere. You know, if you remember the Genki Horiguchi
Homecoming. That's
the
great way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah, very poor atmosphere. Like the Genki shows last year in Kumamoto, they also did the thing where they're running it in a theater-type building, and they're shooting towards the stage, and the stage, for some reason, is just this abyss. It's this pitch-black background, and it sucks the life out of a show that should be pretty fun. Now, I thought the Genki shows last year overcame that, or the Genki show last year overcame that. This one did not. You know, to me, there's two or three things worth watching on this show, but none of them are as, to me, essential as anything on Miyane.
Yeah, I mean, Naruki Doi, insanely popular in his hometown, not as big of a pop as Shingo got. You know, like, it's just kind of like one of those things. Let's talk about your favorite things from the showcase. Strong Machine J versus La Estrella was a real fun time. Like,
just
I feel like that
fun
this
fun match.
That this was, like, for me, as probably the person who's more down on Est than you, I thought that in a singles match in this thing, this was like some of the best that La Estrella has looked, and really, really kind of put his stake in, and really showing like, yeah, no, I am not the purple rookie botch machine that I once was. And I felt that was a really strong match from both of those guys.
It's my point that I always make with Estrella, you know, put him in any other promotion and he would be, if not an average junior heavyweight, an above average junior heavyweight. I would put him in All Japan. I'd put him in NOAH. I think he could hang in New Japan because, you know, the workers that they have, some of them have an extremely high ceiling, but some of them also have an extremely low floor. And Estrella, you're right, he doesn't have that bug in his system anymore, where he could just completely fall apart and have a terrible night. The problem is that he had that in Dragon Gate, a promotion that loses trust quicker than any others when it comes to mistakes. So we'll never probably see Estrella at a high level again, but I love him in this context. I think he is essentially a very fun C-show worker. You know, I almost watch Estrella matches the same way that I would watch a Velocity or, you know, a more contemporary reference of a Rampage, where I don't know, sometimes I just like seeing the guy, you know, go out there 7 minutes, do your thing, come back, didn't embarrass himself. I thought Strong Machine J looked good. This is one of the matches that I would recommend watching.
And they played with the awkward arena in a way that was very funny.
I agree.
I felt like other things that I liked on the show, at the very least, I thought that the semi-main event was really fun, especially I always have an issue with Kamei and Kakuta, because I feel like Kamei and Kakuta, being the sole survivors of that class, should have better chemistry as teammates. They looked so much better as opponents here than I feel like in recent months. Like, I thought this was a really strong kind of this, and I thought it was just a strong Jack match, him and Daya. Like, I was at a moment, I was like, are we going to get the pin here? Is Jack going to get the title defense and Gate of Origin? I don't know if that sells out that building, but I think that felt appropriate, and I bought the fat, and I was like buying into it. But instead, we saw that it was a cutback of the Jackie knife getting Daya the win and kind of escaping by the skin of his teeth against who I'd argue is probably the top Brave Gate contender at this point.
It's interesting that they keep on putting Hyo and Kame together in 2-on-2 matches. You know, they had this one, they wrestled in Kumamoto, actually the same match the week before. in Fukuoka, it was them beating Fuji and Mochizuki on the day show, and then on the evening show, losing to Doi and Dragon Kid. And then before that, they did, again, Daya and Kakuta and Kagoshima. So everything post-Dangerous Gate, they've been teaming two-on-two. They haven't won many of those matches. There's an argument to be made that's like, okay, well, you know, there's no Monte. But they could also have just thrown those guys in with Sachihoko Boy or anybody else and done random trios matches. I would have hoped that all these two-on-twos would be leading to Hyo and Kame challenging for the Twin Gate belts. It doesn't seem like we're going in that direction, though.
No, it they're in this weird holding pattern because of the lack of Monte over the last month. But I also feel like the other reason why they keep him as a tag is so that Hyo can do his long entrance because how over he is.
That is true. And that is, I would argue, a very integral part of the show. And I mean that in all sincerity.
Hey, I mean, the one thing about the Centennial Hall as a venue, you got to see everyone everyone interact with the fans and the ways they interact with them. A lot of people have signature balls throwing out there. I talked about how secondly over decourages with kids. But then you also have in the main event Shun Skywalker basically just deciding to torment everyone in the crowd by just walking through their rows in the entrance. It was really a kind of a funny thing to see them take this inadequate venue and kind of work it for their advantage.
I completely agree. And it's another example of Shun just perfectly assimilating into an environment. It was very much a t-shirt Shun night. You know, he wasn't going out mm-hmm. there to have a fantastic match. But when you're in Naruki Doi's hometown, to be able to foil Doi to that level, to that degree, to know exactly where to be and what kind of heel to be, it's a special talent. You know, I'll end the Nara review the same way we began the Kobe review. We are watching a very, very special wrestler. And again, I think by the end of this year, we can have a real conversation about where Shun ranks in the all-time Dragon Gate hierarchy, because every single thing that he's done this year, it's like, oh, he's better than that person. Oh, a better career than that person. Oh, he's climbing the ladder. And I'm not ready to chisel his name in granite on the Dragon Gate Mount Rushmore yet, but it's also a conversation that feels like we're going to have sooner rather than later.
And in a piece of good news, just touching on the main event, this was the Paradox versus Z Bratz and Naruki Doi homecoming match. The finishing stretch, you had what was, and I'm not pointing this out to like shade or anything like this, one of the few botches I think I've seen Dragon Kid have in the last 15 years, with Jason Lee going up for the Super Frankensteiner and then sliding off and looking like he hurt his knee. He was basically out for the rest of the match other than the finish. Good news, he is on the Kobe show. I was really worried, or he is on the Corkin show this Thursday.
Okay, good.
I was really worried, and I was like, because I know they didn't have another show. I was like, I hope he's on the show here. Just wanted to point that out. Just, he seems like to be okay if he's already on that show, is my greater point, I guess I was making.
Okay, good. That is, I did not put that together, but you're right. That is a good update. Real quick before we go, do you want to read over this Corkin card real quick?
Yeah. So Corkin Stormgate next Thursday. We have 7 matches announced. Worth noting, they did continue to build the Open the Dreamgate match throughout the weekend whenever they had a chance. Yamato and Ishin. I mean, I feel like they're on all cylinders for a strong Corkin defense. Semi-main event, Gold Class versus Z-Bratz, BB Hulk, Benkei, Rita, and Mochizuki Jr. against Shun, Kai, Kota Minora, and Jason Lee. Will this be the will we get to see new gear, and will we get to see a rebrand? That's kind of where my mind's at for that. Match 5, the Hamari Kato debut match against Masaki Mochizuki. Again, match 5. Match 4, Ultimo and Big Hug versus Paradox, Not Hug, Susumu, and Kagatora. Strong Machine J, KZ, UT versus D-Courage. Toru Owashi and Big Boss Shimizu versus Shuji Kanda and Yazushi Kanda. I am very much into that match case. And then as we mentioned earlier, the opener, Punch Tominaga versus the former Corkin Hall staff member, Daiki Yanaguchi. There's something I feel like in each one of these matches that I'm kind of into.
I totally agree. I really hope, because it's match 6 and not like match number 3, I really, really hope Gold Class and Z-Bratz get time. They can do an angle, they can tell a story, but give that match time. let that be utter chaos and then do what you need to do at the finish of that match. But I am hoping that is one of those where it is more of a great match than a great angle. And then maybe we have something come out of it. But I think Rita and Minoru are ready to kill each other. I've loved all of their interactions so far.
Rita has almost had his ass a couple times.
I know. It's really, really interesting what they're doing. Because Minoru, you know, he obviously killed Daiki on the Kobe show. But when he's in there with Rita, it's not complete and utter domination. You know, it feels very Tom and Jerry in the best way possible. And I really like the approach to that. It's a big Corkin spot for Junior, which means I'm into it. This whole show should be very, very fun. So we'll talk about that, not next week, but the week after.
That's right, because I think next week will be our rewind and rewatch week, right?
Perhaps one of two in September. We'll talk about that off the air.
Absolutely. But Case, unless you have anything else, I think we're out of here this week.
I got nothing else.
You could follow us on Twitter at OpenVoiceGate. Case is at _inyourcase. I'm at Fujihaya, and if you haven't listened to it from last week, go back and check out last week's rewind and rewatch. I think that I can only speak for myself. I feel like that was one of the more fun ones we've done in a recent while, and a lot of that is because the one time in the 21st century, Hulk Hogan showed proper business sense, Case.
Very much so.
But that's going to do us for us here. We'll be back with you next week. Take care.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I'm also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.